breath.
"What is it?" Isabel demanded.
"His eyes," Jace said, raising his witchlight and shining it into Mark's face. Mark scowled again but allowed Jace to examine him. His eyes were large, long-lashed like Helen's. Unlike hers, his were mismatched. One was blackthorn blue, the color of water. The other was gold, hazed through with shadows, a darker version of Jace's own. Jace swallowed visibly.
"The Wild Hunt," he said. "You're one of them now."
Jace was scanning the boy with his eyes, as if Mark were a book he could read.
"Put your hands out," Jace said finally, and Mark did so.
Jace caught them and turned them over, baring the other boy's wrists. Clary felt her throat tighten. Mark was wearing only a t-shirt, and his bare forearms were striped with bloody whip marks. Clary thought of the way she had touched Mark's shoulder, and he'd flinched away. God knew what his other injuries were under his clothes.
"When did this happen?"
Mark pulled his hands away. They were shaking.
"Melion did it," he said.
"When he first took me, he said he'd stop if I ate and drank their food, so I did. I didn't think it mattered if my family was dead, and I thought fairies couldn't lie."
"Melion can," said Alec grimly. "Or at least he could."
"When did all this happen?" Isabel demanded.
"The fairies only took you less than a week ago."
Mark shook his head.
"I've been with the folk for a long time," he said. "I couldn't say how long."
"Time runs differently in fairy," Alec said. "Sometimes faster, sometimes slower."
Mark said, "Gwyn told me I belonged to the hunt and I couldn't leave them unless they allowed me to go. Is that true?"
"It's true," Jace said. Mark slumped against the cave wall. He turned his head toward Clary.
"You saw them. You saw my brothers and sisters. And Emma?"
"They're all right, all of them, Emma too," Clary said. She wondered if it helped. He had sworn to stay in Faerie because he thought his family was dead, and the promise held, though it was based on a lie. Was it better to think you had lost everything and to start over? Or easier to know that the people you loved were alive, even if you could never see them again? She thought of her own mother, somewhere in the world beyond the end of the tunnel. Better to know they were alive, she thought. Better for her mother and Luke to be alive and all right and for her to never see them again, than for them to be dead.
"Helen can't take care of them, not alone," Mark said a little desperately.
"And Jules, he's too young. He can't take care of Ty. He doesn't know the things he needs. He doesn't know how to talk to him." He took a shuddering breath.
"You should let me come with you."
"You know you can't," Jay said, though he couldn't look Mark in the face. He was staring at the ground. "If you've sworn fealty to the Wild Hunt, you're one of them."
"Take me with you," Mark repeated.
He had the stunned, bewildered look of someone who had been mortally injured but didn't yet realize the extent of the injury.
"I don't want to be one of them. I want to be with my family."
"We're going to hell," Clary said. "We couldn't bring you with us, even if you could leave Faerie safely."
"And you can't," Alec said.
"If you try to leave, you'll die."
"I'd rather die," Mark said, and Jace's head whipped up. His eyes were bright gold, almost too bright, as if the fire inside him was spilling out through them.
"They took you because you have fairy blood, but also because you have Shadow Hunter blood. They want to punish the Nephilim," Jace said, his gaze intent. "Show them what a Shadow Hunter is made of. Show them you aren't afraid. You can live through this." In the wavering illumination of the witchlight, Mark looked at Jace. Tears had made their tracks through the dirt on his face, but his eyes were dry.
"I don't know what to do," he said. "What do I do?"
"Find a way to warn the Nephilim," Jay said. "We're going into hell, like Clary said. We might never come back. Someone has to tell the Shadow Hunters the fair folk are not their allies."
"The hunters will catch me if I try to send a message," the boy's eyes flashed. "They'll kill me."
"Not if you're fast and smart," said Jace. "You can do it, I know you can."
"Jace," Alec said, his bow at his side.
"Jace, we need to let him go before the hunt notice he's missing."
"Right," Jace said and hesitated.
Clary saw him take Mark's hand. He pressed his witchlight into the boy's palm where it flickered and then resumed its steady glow.
"Take this with you," said Jace, "for it can be dark in the land under the hill and the years very long."
Mark stood for a moment, the runestone in his hand,
He looked so slight in the wavering light that Clary's heart hammered a tattoo of disbelief. Surely they could help him. They were Nephilim. They didn't leave their own behind. And then he turned and ran, away from them, on soundless bare feet.
Mark, Clary whispered and cut herself off.
He was gone. The shadows swallowed him up, only the darting will-o'-the-wisp light of the runestone visible, until it too blended with the darkness. She looked up at Jace.
What did you mean, the land under the hill? She asked. Why did you say that?
Jace didn't answer. He looked stunned. She wondered if Mark, brittle and orphaned and alone, reminded him somehow of himself.
The land under the hill is fairy, said Alec.
An old, old name for it. He'll be all right, he said to Jace.
He will.
You gave him your witchlight, Isabel said. You've always had that witchlight.
Screw the witchlight, Jace said violently and slammed his hand against the wall of the cave.
There was a brief flare of light and he drew his arm back. The mark of his hand was burned into the stone of the tunnel, and his palm still glowed as if the blood in his fingers were phosphorus. He gave an odd, choked laugh.
I don't exactly need it, anyway.
Jace,
Clary said and put her arm on his arm. He didn't move away from her, but he didn't react, either. She dropped her voice.
You can't save everyone, she said.
Maybe not, he said as the light in his hand dimmed. But it would be nice to save someone for a change.
Guys, Simon said. He had been oddly quiet throughout the encounter with Mark, and Clary was startled to hear him speak now.
I don't know if you can see it, but there's something at the end of the tunnel.
A light? Jace said, his voice edged with sarcasm. His eyes glittered.
The opposite.
Simon moved forward, and after a hesitant moment, Clary took her hand from Jace's arm and followed him. The tunnel went straight on ahead and then jogged slightly. At the curve, she saw what Simon must have seen and stopped dead.
Darkness.
The tunnel ended in a whirling vortex of darkness.
Something moved in it, shaping the dark like the wind shaping clouds. She could hear it too. The purr and rumble of the dark like the sound of jet engines.
The others joined her. Together they stood in a line watching the dark, watching it move. The curtain of shadow, and beyond it, the utter unknown. It was Alec who spoke, staring, awed at the moving shadows. The air that blew down the corridor was stinging hot, like pepper thrown into the heart of a fire.
This, he said, is the craziest thing we've ever done.
What if we can't ever come back? Isabel said. The ruby around her neck was pulsing, glowing like a stoplight, illuminating her face.
Then at least we'll be together,
Clary said, and looked around at her companions. She reached out and took Jace's hand and Simon's hand on the other side of her, and held them tight.
We go through together, and on the other side we stay together, she said. All right?
None of them answered, but Isabel took Simon's other hand, and Alec took Jace's. They all stood for a moment, staring. Clary felt Jace's hand tighten on hers, a nearly imperceptible pressure. They stepped forward, and the shadows swallowed them up.
Mirror, my mirror, said the queen, placing her hand upon the mirror. Show me my morning star. The mirror hung on the wall of the queen's bedroom. It was surrounded by wreaths of flowers, roses from which no one had cut away the thorns. The mist inside the mirror coalesced, and Sebastian's angular face looked out. My beautiful one, he said. His voice was calm and composed, though there was blood on his face and clothes. He was holding his sword, and the stars along the blade were dimmed with scarlet. I am somewhat occupied at the moment. I thought you might wish to know that your sister and adoptive brother have just left this place, said the queen. They found the road to Edom. They are coming to you. His face transformed with a wolfish grin. And they didn't make you promise not to tell me that they came to your court. They did, said the queen. They said nothing about telling you of leaving. Sebastian laughed. They killed one of my knights, said the queen. Spilled blood before my throne. They are beyond my reach now. You know my people cannot survive in the poisoned lands. You will have to take my revenge for me. The light in his eyes changed. The queen had always found what Sebastian felt for his sister, and Jace as well, to be something of a mystery. But then Sebastian himself was by far the greater mystery. Before he had come to make her his offer, she would have never considered a true alliance with Shadowhunters. Their peculiar sense of honor made them untrustworthy. It was Sebastian's very lack of honor that made her trust him. The fine craft of betrayal was second nature to fair folk, and Sebastian was an artist of lies. "I will serve your interests in all ways, my queen," he said. "In a short enough while, your people and mine shall hold the reins of the world, and when we do, you may have revenge on any who have ever offended you." She smiled at him. Blood still stained the snow in her throne room, and she still felt the jab of Jace Lightwood's blade against her throat. It was not a real smile, but she knew enough to let her beauty do her work for her sometimes. "I do adore you," she said. "Yes," said Sebastian, and his eyes flickered, their color like dark clouds. The queen wondered idly if he thought of the two of them the way she did, lovers who, even while embracing, each held a knife to the other's back, ready to stab and to betray. "And I do like to be adored," he grinned. "I am glad they are coming. Let them come." Part 2. That World. Inverted. "And that the whole land thereof is brimstone, and salt, and burning. That it is not sown, nor beareth, nor any grass groweth therein." Deuteronomy 29:23.
14. The Sleep of Reason. Clary stood on a shady lawn that rolled away down a sloping hill. The sky overhead was perfectly blue, dotted here and there with white clouds. At her feet, a stone walkway stretched to the front door of a large manor house, built of mellow golden stone. She craned her head back, looking up. The house was lovely. The stones were the color of butter in the spring sunshine, covered in trellises of climbing roses in red and gold and orange. Wrought iron balconies curved out from the facade, and there were two large arch doors of bronze-colored wood, their surfaces wrought with delicate designs of wings. "Wings for the Fairchilds," said a soft voice, reassuring in the back of her mind. "This is Fairchild Manor. It has stood for 400 years and will stand 400 more." "Clary!" Her mother appeared at one of the balconies, wearing an elegant champagne-colored dress. Her red hair was down, and she looked young and beautiful. Her arms were bare, circled with black runes. "What do you think? Doesn't it look gorgeous?" Clary followed her mother's gaze toward where the lawn flattened out. There was an archway of roses set up at the end of an aisle, on either side of which were rows of wooden benches. White flowers were scattered along the aisle, the white flowers that grew only in Idris. The air was rich with their honey scent. She looked back up at her mother, who was no longer standing alone on the balcony. Luke was standing behind her, an arm around her waist. He was in rolled-up shirt sleeves and formal trousers, as if halfway dressed for a party. His arms, too, were twined with runes, runes for good luck, for insight, for strength, for love. "Are you ready?" he called down to Clary. "Ready for what?" she said, but they didn't seem to hear her. Smiling, they disappeared back into the house. Clary took a few steps along the path. "Clary!" She whirled. He was coming toward her across the grass, slender, with white pale hair that shone in the sunlight, dressed in formal black with gold runes at his collar and cuffs. He was grinning, a smudge of dirt on his cheek, and holding up a hand to block the brightness of the sun. Sebastian. He was entirely the same, and yet entirely different. He was clearly himself, and yet the whole shape and set of his features seemed to have changed. His bones less sharp, his skin sun-darkened rather than pale, and his eyes shone as green as spring grass. "He has always had green eyes," said the voice in her head. "People often marvel at how much alike you are, he and your mother and yourself. His name is Jonathan, and he is your brother. He has always protected you." "Clary,"
he said again. You're not going to believe.
Jonathan!
The small voice trilled, and Clary turned her wondering eyes to see a little girl dashing across the grass. She had red hair, the same shade as Clary's, and it flew out behind her like a banner. She was barefoot, wearing a green lace dress that had been so thoroughly torn to ribbons at the cuffs and hem that it resembled shredded lettuce. She might have been 4 or 5 years old, dirty face and adorable. As she reached Jonathan, she held up her arms and he bent down to swing her up into the air. She shrieked in delight as he held her over his head.
Ouch, ouch, quit that, you demon child, he said as she pulled at his hair. Val, I said stop or I'll hold you upside down, I mean it.
Val? Clary echoed.
But of course her name is Valentina, said the whispering voice in the back of her head.
Valentine Morgenstern was a great hero of the war. He died in battle against Hodge Starkweather, but not before he had saved the mortal cup and the clave along with it. When Luke married your mother, they honored his memory in the name of their daughter.
Clary, make him let me go, make him... Ow!
Shrieked Val as Jonathan turned her upside down and swung her through the air. Val dissolved into giggles as he set her down on the grass, and she turned a pair of eyes, the exact blue of Luke's, up at Clary.
Your dress is pretty, she said matter-of-factly.
Thank you, Clary said, still half in a daze, and looked at Jonathan, who was grinning down at his small sister. Is that dirt on your face? Jonathan reached up and touched his cheek. Chocolate, he said. You'll never guess what I found Val doing. She had both fists in the wedding cake. I'm going to have to patch it up. He squinted at Clary. Okay, maybe I shouldn't have mentioned that. You look like you're going to pass out. I'm fine, Clary said, tugging nervously at a lock of her hair. Jonathan put his hands up as if to ward her off. Look, I'll perform surgery on it. No one will ever be able to tell that someone ate half the roses off. He looked thoughtful. I could eat the other half of the roses, just so it's even.
Yeah,
said Val from her place on the grass at his feet. She was busy yanking up dandelions, their white pods blowing in the wind. Also, Jonathan added, I hate to bring this up, but you might want to put some shoes on before the wedding. Clary looked down at herself. He was right, she was barefoot. Barefoot and wearing a pale gold dress. The hem drifted around her ankles like a sunset-colored cloud. What wedding? Her brother's green eyes widened. Your wedding? You know, to Jace Herondale? About yay high blonde, all the girls love him. He broke off. You having cold feet, is that what it is? He leaned in conspiratorially. Because if it is, I'll totally smuggle you over the border into France, and I won't tell anyone where you went, even if they stick bamboo shoots under my fingernails. Clary stared at him. Bamboo shoots? He shrugged eloquently. For my only sister, not counting the creature currently sitting on my foot, Val yelped, I would do it, even if it means not getting to see Isabel Lightwood in a strapless dress. Isabel? You like Isabel? Clary felt as if she were running a marathon and couldn't quite catch her breath. He squinted at her. Is that a problem? Is she a wanted criminal or something? He looked thoughtful. That would be kind of hot, actually. Okay, I don't need to know what you think is hot, Clary said automatically. Blech. Jonathan grinned. It was an unconcerned, happy grin. The grin of someone who'd never really had much to worry about beyond pretty girls and whether one of his little sisters had eaten the other sister's wedding cake. Somewhere in the back of Clary's mind, she saw black eyes and whip marks. But she didn't know why. He's your brother. He's your brother and he's always taking care of you.
Right, he said. Like I didn't have to suffer through years of, ooh, Jesus is so cute, do you think he likes me?
Clary said and broke off, feeling a little dizzy. I just don't remember him proposing. Jonathan knelt down and tugged on Val's hair. She was humming to herself, bundling daisies together in a pile. Clary blinked, she'd been so sure they were dandelions.
Oh, I don't know if he ever did, he said casually. We all just knew you'd end up together, it was inevitable.
But I should have gotten to choose, she said in a near whisper. I should have gotten to say yes.
Well, you would have, wouldn't you? He said, watching the daisies blow across the grass. Speaking of, do you think Isabel would go out with me if I asked her?
Clary's breath caught.
But what about Simon?
He looked up at her, the sun bright in his eyes.
Who's Simon?
Clary felt the ground give way under her. She reached out as if to catch at her brother, but her hand went through him. He was as insubstantial as air. The green lawn and the golden mansion and the boy and the girl on the grass flew away from her, and she stumbled, hitting the ground hard, jarring her elbows with a pain she felt flare up her arms. She rolled to her side, choking. She was lying on a patch of bleak ground. Broken cobblestones jutted up through the earth, and the burned-out shells of stone houses loomed over her. The sky was white-gray steel, shot through with black clouds like vampire veins. It was a dead world, a world with all the color leached out of it, and all the life. Clary curled up on the ground, seeing in front of her not the shell of a destroyed town, but the eyes of the brother and sister that she would never have.
Simon stood at the window, taking in the view of the city of Manhattan. It was an impressive sight. From the penthouse floor of the Carolina, you could see across Central Park, to the Met Museum, to the high-rises of downtown. Night was falling, and the city lights were beginning to shine out, one by one, a bed of electric flowers. Electric flowers. He looked around, frowning thoughtfully. It was a nice turn of phrase. Perhaps he should write it down. He never seemed to have time these days to really work on lyrics. Time was swallowed up by other things. Promotion, touring, signings, appearances. It was hard to remember sometimes that his main job was making music. Still, a good problem to have. The darkening sky turned the window to a mirror. Simon smiled at his reflection in the glass. Tousled hair, jeans, vintage t-shirt. He could see the room behind him, vast acres of hardwood floor, gleaming steel, and leather furniture. A single elegant gold-framed painting on the wall. A Chagall, Clary's favorite. All soft roses and blues and greens, incongruous against the apartment's modernity. There was a vase of hydrangeas on the kitchen island, a gift from his mother, congratulating him on playing a gig with Stepping Razor the week before. "I love you," said the note attached. "I'm proud of you." He blinked at it. Hydrangeas? That was odd. If he had a favorite flower, it was roses, and his mother knew that. He turned away from the window and looked more closely at the vase. They were roses. He shook his head to clear it. White roses. They always had been. Right. He heard the rattle of keys, and the door swung open, admitting a petite girl with long red hair and a brilliant smile. "Oh my God!" said Clary, half laughing, half out of breath. She pushed the door shut behind her and leaned against it. "The lobby is a zoo. Press, photographers, it's going to be crazy going out tonight." She came across the room, dropping her keys on the table. She was wearing a long dress, yellow silk printed with colorful butterflies, and a butterfly clip in her long red hair. She looked warm and open and loving, and as she neared him, she put her arms up, and he went to kiss her. Just like he did every day when she came home. She smelled like Clary, perfume and chalk, and her fingers were smudged with color. She wound her fingers in his hair as they kissed, tugging him down, laughing against his mouth as he nearly overbalanced. "You're going to have to start wearing heels, Frey," he said, lips against her cheek. "I hate heels. You'll either have to deal or buy me a portable ladder," she said, letting him go. "Unless you want to leave me for a really tall groupie." "Never," he said, tucking a lock of hair behind her ear. "Would a really tall groupie know all my favorite foods? Remember when I had a bed shaped like a race car? Know how to beat me mercilessly at Scrabble? Be willing to put up with Matt and Kirk and Eric." A groupie would more than put up with Matt and Kirk and Eric. "Be nice," he said, and grinned down at her. "You're stuck with me." "I'll survive," she said, plucking his glasses off and setting them on the table. The eyes she turned up to him were dark and wide. This time the kiss was more heated. He wound his arms around her, pulling her against him as she whispered, "I love you. I've always loved you." "I love you too," he said. "God, I love you, Isabel." He felt her stiffen in his arms. and then the world around him seemed to sprout black lines like shattered glass. He heard a high-pitched whine in his ears and staggered back, tripping, falling, not hitting the ground but spinning forever through the dark.
"Don't look, don't look," Isabel laughed. "I'm not looking." There were hands over her eyes, Simon's hands, slim and flexible. His arms were around her and they were shuffling forward together, laughing. He'd grabbed her the moment she'd walked in the front door, wrapping his arms around her as her shopping bags dropped from her hands.
"I have a surprise for you," he said, grinning. "Close your eyes, no looking. No, really, I'm not kidding."
"I hate surprises," Isabel protested now. "You know that." She could just see the edge of the rug under Simon's hands. She'd picked it out herself, and it was thick, bright pink and fuzzy. Their apartment was small and cozy, a hodgepodge of Isabel and Simon, guitars and katanas, vintage posters and hot pink bedspreads. Simon had brought his cat, Yossarian, when they'd moved in together, which Isabel had protested but secretly liked. She'd missed church after she'd left the Institute. The pink rug vanished, and now Isabel's heels clicked onto the tile floor of the kitchen.
"Okay," Simon said and withdrew his hands.
"Surprise! Surprise!" The kitchen was full of people, her mother and father, Jace and Alec and Max, Clary and Jordan and Maya, Kirk and Matt and Eric. Magnus was holding a silver sparkler and winking, waving it back and forth as the sparkles flew everywhere, landing on the stone counters and Jace's t-shirt making him yelp. Clary was holding a clumsily lettered sign. "Happy birthday, Isabel." She held it up and waved. Isabel whirled on Simon accusingly. "You planned this?"
"Of course I did," he said, pulling her towards him. "Shadowhunters might not care about birthdays, but I do."
He kissed her ear, murmuring, "You should have everything, Izzy," before he let her go and her family descended. There was a whirl of hugs, of presents and cake baked by Eric, who actually had something of a flair for pastry creation, and decorated by Magnus with luminous frosting that tasted better than it looked. Robert had his arms around Maris, who was leaning back against him, looking on proudly and contentedly as Magnus, one hand ruffling Alec's hair, tried to convince Max to put on a party hat. Max, with all the self-possession of a 9-year-old, was having none of it. He waved away Magnus's hand impatiently and said,
"Izzy, I made the sign. Did you see the sign?"
Izzy glanced over at the hand-lettered sign, now liberally smeared with frosting on the table. Clary winked at her.
"It's awesome, Max. Thank you." "I was going to put what birthday it was on the sign," he said. "But Jace said that after 20 you're just old, so it doesn't matter anyway."
Jace stopped with his fork halfway to his mouth.
"I said that?"
"Way to make us all feel ancient," said Simon, pushing his hair back to smile at Isabel. She felt a little twist of pain inside her chest. She loved him that much for doing this for her, for always thinking of her. She couldn't remember a time when she hadn't loved him or trusted him, and he'd never given her a reason not to do either. Isabel slid off the stool she'd been sitting on and knelt down in front of her little brother. She could see their reflection in the steel of the refrigerator. Her own dark hair cut to her shoulders now. She remembered vaguely years ago when her hair had reached her waist. And Max's brown curls and glasses.
"Do you know how old I am?" she said.
22, Max said in the tone of voice that indicated he wasn't sure why she was asking him such a stupid question.
22, she thought. She'd always been 7 years older than Max. Max the surprise, Max the little brother she hadn't expected. Max, who should be 15 now. She swallowed, suddenly cold all over. Everyone was still talking and laughing around her, but the laughing sounded distant and echoing as if it came from very far away. She could see Simon leaning against the counter, his arms folded over his chest, his dark eyes unreadable as he watched her.
"And how old are you?" Isabel said.
9, said Max. "I've always been 9.
Isabel stared. The kitchen around her was wavering. She could see through it as if she was staring through printed fabric. Everything going transparent, as mutable as water.
"Baby," she whispered. "My Max, my baby brother, please, please stay."
"I'll always be 9, he said and touched her face. His fingers passed through her as if he were passing his hand through smoke.
"Isabel?"
he said in a fading voice and disappeared. Isabel felt her knees give. She sank to the ground. There was no laughter around her.
No pretty tiled kitchen, only grey, powdery ash and blackened